Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Secretary.
Good morning. Go ahead and be seated. The rest of you, you're already in place. All right, first matter on our calendar this morning. Dolan versus State. This is docket number 54689. Mr. Jackson, I assume you're ready. You're up there. And
I'm ready to go. May it please the court, counsel. I'm here to argue on behalf of Mr. Donlin. I am going to urge the court that he be granted a petition to terminate his duty to register as a sexual offender. There's several reasons why I think the Nevada statute, as it is written, has a gap in it. I urge this in front of the district court judge, but they did not feel that they had the authority to fill in that gap. I think the statute, as it is written, leads to absurd conclusions in someone in the situation of Mr. Donlin. And it may not have been anticipated when the legislature wrote the statute, but the legislature clearly, when it wrote the statute, was seeking to devise a remedy to grant for individuals who were not at risk of harm to people in a situation like Mr. Donlin. It makes sense that they were seeking that when someone such as Mr. Donlin, who has stayed out of trouble for 25 years, who is not reoffended, who has acknowledged his crime, who has passed a psychological evaluation, and who has complied with all the requirements of the Nevada registration requirements, then comes into this state, that he should be able to terminate his duty to register.
But why should the court take action on this rather than the legislature? They could correct it so easily.
They can.
For anybody who's in the same position as him.
Well, by the time they do, Mr. Donlin may be 75, 80 years of age. I understand the legislature can go back and correct this, and as maybe that is a long-term remedy. As a short-term remedy, I think the situation is this. I know the legislature has many, many important things to do. Probably trying to pass a budget this year is going to be a very difficult thing and get them sidetracked. I know these matters are extremely political, difficult matters. In this situation, I think it also violates an equal protection right of the defendant. And it also involves his fundamental right to travel. And I'd like to elaborate on that if the court would please. The United States Supreme Court in Sands versus Roe articulated right to travel. But in this particular case, if the statute as applied is sustained, someone could could live in the state of California, could comply with everything, could stay out of trouble for, instead of 25 years, they could stay out of trouble for 40 years. And they could, as the defendant has, get their duty to register terminated by the state of California, and then want to move to Nevada. And Nevada will say, fine, we'll let you in, but we're going to make you register for the next 15 years. Now, in the defendant's case, he's 67 years old. He'll have to keep registering until he's 76. What if the defendant waited in California until he was 75? He wanted to move to Nevada to go to the Lou Rubel Brain Institute, and he was 75 years of age, and Nevada says, well, you're going to have to register And he said, well, California has terminated my right to register. The state says, we don't recognize that. We don't recognize California's determination. You're going to have to wait 15 years to terminate. He said, well, I'll be 90 or 95. Well, too bad. The legislature has spoken. I think it's an absurd result. And statutory construction is such that if we have an absurd result, we should correct it, especially when we have a situation involving fundamental rights.
Mr. Jackson, you talk in terms of the fundamental rights. Do you have any case authority to bolster that position?
Fundamental right to travel, Sains versus Roe. I can cite that for Your Honor.
Well, not just the citation of a particular case, but the application of that case to this particular issue and how that impedes his right
People
to travel.
Versus McVeigh, I would cite to the court dealing with that, dealing with the exact issue, which dealt with the right to travel, and I can cite some language from that case if the court would please. Frittering away my time, but
Mr. Jackson, why don't you just go ahead and move to the rest of your argument?
All right. The other argument I'd make to the court, and I think the strongest, is the full faith and credit argument. The Attorney General, in an opinion in 1996, made clear that when civil rights are restored, the state of Nevada should follow. Should grant those civil rights in the state of Nevada. That was a voting rights case. But I think the principle is the same. That Attorney General opinion.
Oh, Mr. Jackson, I'd like to clarify something factually, if I might. Mr. Donlan's civil rights were not restored by the state of California. As I understood the facts, but correct me if I'm wrong, the Attorney General's office there, or the DOJ there, simply entered a decision that he no longer needed to register under their state's statutory structure. There was no amendment to the judgment of conviction. There was no restoration of his civil rights, as I understand it, but maybe I'm misunderstanding the facts and invite you to correct me if you could.
What it was,
and assuming that I'm correct, is there a case you have that shows full faith and credit for an executive branch administrative action like that?
It was a case from Nevada. It was from Nevada, excuse me, California Penal Code. Or the statute is California Penal Code 290.5, which basically terminates the duty to register, similar to what happens here. That's what was granted to Mr. Donlan. That happened in, I think it was July of 2009. That was from the appropriate agency in the state of California. Now, whether or not Nevada should follow it or not, I think Nevada, which has entered into a compact with California, and 179, I think it's 0.060, Nevada is in a compact where they share information regarding sexual offenders. We've agreed to share this information with all the states. We've entered into this compact. Nevada knew about Mr. Donlan's status. They knew he'd been registering there for 15 years because they've been sharing this information the whole time. I believe Nevada is in the compact with California. Therefore, because we're in this compact, because California statute 290.5 is basically identical with Nevada, I think it would make no sense for Nevada not to follow California's rule. And I do have the case dealing with the right to travel. It is Doe versus McVeigh, and I'd like to read a part of it to the court at this time, which I think is relevant. If the court would please. This is from 381 Fed Sup Second 443, a case in the United States District Court, Eastern District of Pennsylvania. It says there are many reasons why in-state offenders are unknown to communities as out-of-state ones. The transience of the population, the length of time between trial and release from prison of an offender, the sheer size of the population of most cities and towns. In fact, these reasons may have been offered in support of Megan's Law. There's simply no reason to support the defendants, in that case, that's the state, contention to the contrary, in the record or otherwise. In short, any concern over the public's lack of knowledge about out-of-state offenders applies with equal force to the in-state offenders, and therefore it cannot justify Pennsylvania's disparate treatment of two groups. Doe retains a fundamental right to travel that would trigger a heightened scrutiny. See Sains versus Roe. The court recognized that the right to travel was implicated by the sexual offender registration statutes that were imposed in this state. And I think this court should recognize that the right to travel would be implicated by keeping the registration statute or applying it literally or with strict scrutiny as the state has suggested.
Mr. Jackson, it seems to fly in the face of your argument, the fact that he was allowed to travel and relocate here and register in the first place within arguably the initial time period. And there was no restriction on him relocating.
Well, he was allowed to, but whether he was fully aware that he would not be allowed to gain the benefits that he got from California, he did not get his registration terminated from California until after he moved here. I don't think he was fully aware of all of his rights. In fact, most of the individuals that I have represented on these matters don't even know of the 10 or 15-year limitations imposed by NRS 179.490. I think that the purpose of the law is to protect society. And I think in looking at Mr. Donlan, in looking at the facts of his case, he has managed to abide by all the statutory requirements that 149 or 179.490 requires.
Why didn't he seek an unconditional pardon in California? I mean, we sit on the pardon board. We see it all the time. These people, all they want to do is go bird hunting so they get their guns back.
I don't know the answer to that.
Because if he did, I think it would be a different issue.
I can't answer that question.
I guess a more fundamental question is Nevada allowed to have laws that are different from California? And do we take dictate from California in terms of time periods?
I'm out of time, but I will answer that question if I'm given the opportunity.
Go ahead.
Nevada, of course, is allowed to have different laws from California, but they should be rationally based on, and they should not violate equal protection. They should not violate a person's fundamental rights under the United States Constitution, including his right to travel, including his right to associate, including his right to be treated equally with others. Now, I didn't get to the issue because I ran out of time, but in answering the question, whether or not a sex offender is a suspect class, most of the cases have said that a sex offender is not someone who is in a suspect class. However, in the unique circumstances that Mr. Donlin is in, I think he would be in a suspect class because of the fact that he has been totally not violative of any statutes, and because of his age and because of the fact that he has no remedy. There is no viable remedy for him. And I would submit it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
Good morning. My name is Vinu Palal. I'm a Deputy Attorney General for the State of Nevada, and I'm representing the respondents in this case. Now, the issues before this court seem to be pretty clear. One, what does 179D490 actually mean? Two, whether, given its plain meaning, does it violate the full faith and credit clause of the U.S. Constitution? And three, whether or not the statute violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. The state's position is that the statute should be read given its plain meaning. Now, I'll first address the meaning of the statute. The canons of construction in Nevada are fairly clear. If a statute is not ambiguous, it will be given its plain meaning absent it leading to an absurd result. There's no dispute what the plain meaning of the statute is. You have to register within the state of Nevada for 15 years, at which point you may seek to be removed by petition to the district court in which you reside. Now, there's been some talk about an absurd result, but I think it's important we review what an absurd result means. An absurd result is not an absurd policy decision that the legislature has come to, right? It's not something that myself or opposing counsel or Mr. Donlin believe that the legislature did that resulted in an absurd conclusion. Instead, in this context, an absurd result is when a hyper-technical reading of the statute would have it violate the intent of the statute. But what's the intent of the statute? To protect the Nevada citizenry against the sex offenders. Moreover, it's actually meant to put somewhat restrictive registration requirements on sex offenders. And to that extent, the plain meaning of the statute actually does not lead to any absurd result. The statute does exactly what the legislature intended.
Sounds like you're talking about rational basis.
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. And in the next topic, equal protection, that's where we get to that, right? First, on the issue, we should determine what basis we review the statute under equal protection analysis. Before this court are basically two options, rational basis or strict scrutiny. Now, in order to get to strict scrutiny analysis, there needs to be a member of a suspect class or it must affect a fundamental right. Now, no court in the United States has ever found sex offenders to be a suspect class. We cited for you U.S. v. LeMay in the Ninth Circuit, which just says it almost a priori that sex offenders are not members of a suspect class. And in fact, if you look at what suspect class actually entails, we have ethnic minorities, national origin, we have religion, we have alienage. Now, to include those people who have been convicted of sexual crimes against minors in that group clearly doesn't make any sense. So then the other area, other way to trigger strict scrutiny would be if it affected a fundamental right. Now, in this instance, we're talking about interstate travel. But opposing counsel mentioned Sines v. Roe, and that's a case that basically talks about what restrictions on interstate travel actually impede the fundamental right. Any impeding interstate travel is not in itself a violation of the right. It's not in and of itself implicate strict scrutiny. Instead, there are three instances. First, if it prevents citizens from entering or leaving. Here, the law doesn't prevent anybody from entering or leaving. Mr. Donlin is more than welcome to avail himself of all the privileges of a citizen of Nevada as long as he registers. And Mr. Donlin isn't even required to live, isn't even subject to residency restrictions, as other sex offender laws have. He can live anywhere he wants. All he has to do is register with the local authority. The second time an interstate travel causes for there to be strict scrutiny is if treating temporarily present citizens of other states as unfriendly aliens. Here, Mr. Donlin is a permanent citizen of the state of Nevada. He's not a temporary citizen. The strict scrutiny in that case, the fundamental right of interstate travel also is not implicated. And the last instance where interstate travel implicates a restriction on interstate travel actually implicates a fundamental right is that if discriminating against citizens of other states who elect to become permanent residents, there is no discrimination here. Every person who enters Nevada, whether they be a Nevada citizen or a person coming from California or Texas or New York or even outside the United States, must register for 15 years with a central repository. In essence, interstate travel, as is contemplated as an element to increase the scrutiny of a statute, is not implicated in this case or with this law. But I would go one step further. I would say even given strict scrutiny, of which there's no legal reason to apply, this statute could pass strict scrutiny. In order to pass strict scrutiny, what you need is a compelling government interest narrowly tailored to meet that interest. Here, the compelling government interest for Nevada to protect Nevada's citizenry is compelling. Time and time again, courts have found the notion of protecting its citizenry is in fact a compelling government interest. And it is narrowly tailored to meet that goal. We cited to you Smith v. Doe and an accompanying study from the Department of Justice saying that contrary to popular belief, sex offenders who reoffend don't necessarily do it within the first 5 or 10 years.
But counsel, as you're making this argument, if the person is convicted here in the state of Nevada, it's 15 years from the time of his conviction or his release from prison, whichever the case, for registration. So you're saying this tacking, if he was convicted in California and waits, as Mr. Jackson says, till you're 13 or 14, moves from California, we're then going to, on top of that, impose another 15 years to make it a period of 29 years. Why is that, compared to the 15 years, rationally related? Why, or under strict scrutiny, how does that balance out?
It balances out the fact that Nevada is...
Since we are applying, as to our own residents, only 15 years. But anyone else, we say, oh, by the way, we're going to just take it and double on.
I'll respectfully disagree with that point on the sense that we're not attacking on anything. All we're saying is while you are in the state of Nevada, you have to be registered for 15 consecutive years. Now, as a result of that...
But we go back to what the purpose is. If we say 15 years is good enough in Nevada, then why are we then tacking on an additional time for someone else?
The legislature made a determination that we are going to track people for 15 years within the state of Nevada. The state of Nevada doesn't have access. The state of Nevada's registration requirements are not the same as California, Illinois, New York, Texas. Nevada has its own registration requirements.
I got that part. But like I said, what's the basis of doubling up? Why? 15 years is good enough total time. Then why is 15 years not good enough total time?
I respectfully,
if we look at attacking of 5 years in California, 10 years in Nevada, 15 years being 15 years, why is that not?
Well, I respectfully disagree with the premise that Nevada is tacking on. Nevada is not tacking on to other states. Nevada is strictly concerned with when they're in the state of Nevada. So Nevada has no control over what goes on in other states, or isn't involved in the policy decisions of the other states. Nevada is solely concerned with the decision with registration within the state of Nevada.
Could he have registered before he moved here and started the 15-year clock running?
The statute allows for non-resident workers and non-resident students to register here if they're working here or if they're a student here.
So someone in that position would be able to start the 15-year time clock running.
Right. Absolutely. In fact, the statute explicitly contemplates that.
If he had been pardoned in California, would he have had to register here?
That's an interesting question. What's different in this case is that implicates the full faith and credit argument. And I think it's important point to juxtapose what's going on in that instance versus here, right? Here we just have a letter from the Department of Justice saying administratively you aren't required to do it. Now, if there was an order from California saying you no longer have to register, I think there's a stronger argument to make that a person doesn't have to register here. Although in our brief, and I'll just move on to the full faith and credit portion, in our brief we cite a case, Rosen v. Monken. It's a Seventh Circuit case. And in that case, the Seventh Circuit says, look, a person was convicted of a sex offense while in New York. Explicitly part of that plea agreement, scratched out was the requirement to register as a sex offender. There's a form plea agreement, there's a registration provision, and it's marked off as part of the plea. What the Seventh Circuit said is that New York cannot tell Illinois how it's to protect its citizenry, that this implicates the fundamental police power of a state. So even if New York is to determine that the defendant doesn't have to register under any circumstances, and even if New York were to say doesn't have to register in any state, the Seventh Circuit's position is that is of no bearing in Illinois, because Illinois has the sole province when it comes to its police power. Full faith and credit was never meant to allow California to determine how Nevada is going to handle its protecting its citizenry. In fact, if I could backtrack a little bit on that, full faith and credit requires two issues, right? You need to have a judgment from a court, and then it needs to be a subject area that's permissible for that court to render in another state. Here, we lack even a judgment. What we do have is a decision from the California Department of Justice says, according to our statutes, you are no longer required to register in the state of California. It's an accurate statement of law for California, but has no bearing on Nevada. Nevada doesn't have to recognize that. And I think there's an important issue within that, which is Nevada's police power, Nevada's power to protect its citizenry, to the extent that if California were to have, let's say, a one-year registration requirement, if California then issues, all right, you've registered for 1 year, you're now no longer required to register here, would Nevada be required to say, all right, well, you've met California's requirement, you don't have to register here, even though it's grossly disparate from what Nevada's legislators have contemplated is appropriate to protect Nevada's citizenry. Again, referring to that Rosen v. Monken case, the Seventh Circuit case, Seventh Circuit said, no, that's interfering too much in a sister state. Actually, I do want to touch upon one last thing on equal protection. I don't think there's any question that the statute passes the rational basis test. And if we look at what the U.S. Supreme Court has said on rational basis test, it says if there's any reasonably conceivable state of facts that could provide a rational basis for it, the statute passes constitutional muster. Even if we disagree with the policy, even if we think the policy is itself repugnant, it's so long as there is some basis, some conceivable fact to support it, the statute survives equal protection analysis. And backtracking a little bit further, it's not enough to say that this impedes interstate travel. It's not enough to just say it impedes interstate travel. That itself does not render statute unconstitutional. It's interstate travel merely triggers strict scrutiny. And so and that's why I just want to remind this court that even if this court were to find that it does impede interstate travel, which I don't believe the case law supports, even then that's not enough to find the...
Then, counsel, if we assume as you're, since you've gone down this road, if it is strict scrutiny, give us your application.
I'm sorry?
If we were to apply a strict scrutiny approach, since you've gone down that road, then how... Why should we sustain the provision if it's strict scrutiny?
Well, as we discussed earlier, the state believes it's narrowly tailored to serve its purpose. Its purpose is to keep sex offenders registered so we can keep track of where they are and have information on them. As there have been many high-profile cases of sex offenders within this state, within our neighboring state, of reoffending. What this statute
well, we're not talking about Tier 1. We're talking about Tier 1 in this case. You're talking about Tier 2 or Tier 3 as to this other classification. I mean, just to be blunt, not to offend anybody, Tier 1 in some cases are folks that got drunk and took a whiz in public and got dinged by a cop.
Yeah.
And so now the law changed on them and they're reporting 25 years later.
Your Honor.
So it's a different classification, so... Be careful with your language in terms of how broad you're making this and how you're grouping these people. Because we look at some of these individuals, as Mr. Jackson said, this gentleman, whether he should or shouldn't register for 25 years has stayed out of trouble. And I don't know what his particular background was, don't even really care. But so as we talk about this, comparing apples and oranges gets you into trouble a little bit.
Fair enough, Your Honor. First of all, with the extent of urinating in public, this has been, I believe, it's been mentioned in other sex offender cases. I believe it to be a straw man argument in the sense that that's not a sex offense in the state of Nevada.
Well, it's based on, he was convicted of a sex offense in another state, and so he has to register. We get that.
Okay. I think my time is up, so thank you very much for your time.
Any questions? And did he answer your question?
Not really, but you made a good try.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate you being here today. We appreciate your arguments. This case will stand submitted.